and welcome to the Heddo and Seva Uncharted podcast. Seva, welcome.
Cheers, Heddo.
We had some really good feedback from last week's episode with Michael Thwaite. He spoke open and candidly, and the feedback's been really good.
Yeah, it was massive, especially when we touched on mental health. I think it resided with a lot of people. And I even had my neighbour across the road get me at a weird hour of the night. Came over and said, mate, I really loved it, and can we deliver more? And we're definitely going to be doing it.
And that's what the podcast is about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've got our first in-studio guest tonight, a good friend of yours. The once was King of Mykonos, current assistant coach at Marconi, Peter Papathis. Flea, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure. I've always, when I was a kid, I always, after I left school, I wanted to play football only. But I wanted my own talk show. It was weird. People used to go, well, what are you going to do on a talk show? I go, I'll just talk sport, talk life. Now I'm on a podcast, so like a little bit of a dream come true.
Mate, we can't wait for the stories that we've been speaking about.
Yeah, thanks. It was great seeing you guys at the Palace. Danny's a favourite around the traps there. He played for Marconi, and a lot of the old staff still remember him, and they speak fondly of him. And the magical left foot. I'm sure you've heard about his left foot. There was a
we have
magic comes out of that foot. So I'll tell you a good story. We were at a function for a Player of the Year award, and there was a guy doing magic tricks up on stage just before they were announcing the Player of the Year, leading goal scorer. And we were on the coaches' tables. Seva was back on the players' table with George Nora and Richard Luksic and, all those guys back there, Honza and Borgie. And he's called out to me. He's going, Flea. And I'm going, shut up. He's going, Flea. And he's going like this. This is magic.
Listen to you.
This is magic. And I'm going, shut up, man. Seka, listen to this bloke. And he's like, the whole place stopped and turned around, and he's going, this is magic. My left foot, this is magic.
Wow.
They're the sort of things he used to get up to. It was like a little rat bag.
Now, you and Seva go way back, right?
Yeah. We've both came to Bankstown the same week. So I was a assistant coach at Olympic, and I wasn't having a good time there. The head coach was John Doyle at the time. I don't know, he didn't really like me, inherited me. He maybe wanted his own staff. I felt uncomfortable there. Seka said to me, why don't you come here to Bankstown? But I was a big Sydney Olympic fan as a kid. I went to all the games, I used to just love Olympic as most young Greek kids did. Yep. And I said to him, I can't quit, man. I'm not a quitter. If he wants to get rid of me, I'll go. And he sort of pushed me. He goes, come on, Flea, just come over. And then I rang the club and I said, where do I stand with all this? And they're going, oh, why don't you write an email or send us a fax? I said, email? Fax? I don't do those things. I said, I rang up sick. I said, I'm coming over, man. So I got in my car. I went to Jensen and was a little bit nervous. I'd seen them in the preseason. I knew they were good. And He was there. It was his first session too. And we were doing shooting towards the grandstand. So the balls were, hit the grandstand and come back. And the balls were like flying and you could hear them. I don't know, soccer players will understand when I say you can hear them. They were all like whoosh, whoosh, going past. And people were ducking, and they're going, oh. Like they were hitting the fence and coming back at you like grenades, right? Boom. I said to Tseka, who's this guy? Fuck, he's got a cannon. It's a cannon in his left foot. They go, Severino, he's just come back from overseas. I go, mate, you got to sign him up. Okay, he goes, yeah, we're getting him. So at the end of that session, you can even ask Tseke if you have him on soon. I said to him, this team here will win the comp. And he goes to me, oh, geez, you're pretty confident. You've been here 5 minutes. I go, I've played in NPL for 17 years and I know what teams won the comps. These were the teams. This, they had steel, they were strong, they were aggressive at training towards each other, and they had finesse. Like the game, we had a little game before the shooting, and I was just going, oh, this is like the Harlem Globetrotters. And I'm just flicking the ball around, pop, 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 pop. And you just thought, then I saw them shoot. I go, oh, these guys are winners.
And Seva used to say that back at Bankstown that it was You were training like you were playing. Tackles flying in. There was no really preservation for your own for yourself at all.
Nah, the six-a-side games there, five-a-side mini World Cups games were intense. They were like aggressive. They were full on. Like they were best mates, but they would kick the hell out of each other. And there was great games. Goals was flying in, and I remember clearly. Grand final week, we had a Friday session, and I've spoke to Sever about this before. The grand final was Sunday, and the last session, the very last session of the year, and we'd had a fantastic year. We'd finished first in this weird final system, final eight. We'd won seven games, and we were like 10, 15 points ahead. And I go, if we lose a grand final after being so far ahead, what a waste of a year. And we're having this this training drill where it's three teams that two teams with the ball and one team without, and they're flying in, kicking the hell out of each other. And I had a friend there come to visit, Ephraim.
It was raining as well that night.
It was raining.
So it was worse.
Ephraim is a well-known physio, right? And I said to him, come and have a look at these guys. And he was going like this. Oh, like he said, because they're going to kill each other. I go, that's the way they play. They had shaved their heads. Five of them.
Really?
Shaved heads, mohawks, coloured mohawks. Like they looked like punk rockers. And I go, yeah, we can't lose. I said to Tseka, I go, oh, we're going to win this easy. He goes, hey, what do you mean? I go, who turns up like these madmen? Shaved heads, mohawks. And they just destroyed them. They destroyed Bonnie Rigg. And it was a fantastic feeling for me coming to a club six games in. I'd only missed the first six games. I didn't think we lost. We never lost. We lost one game in the last 20, and we went on to win that grand final, and we celebrated. It was a big, big celebration. And
good night out after.
It was big. We knew how to party at Bankstown.
Yeah. It was ready to go. And obviously Fleece is in the game for that long for a reason. Sever, right? Like you've said before about his halftime speeches and that sort of stuff, and he gets the boys up.
Yeah, I've done interviews overseas, and they've asked me, who are your favourite coaches? And the honest truth, I've got to say it, is Flea and Seca. I've never had such, even though it was semi-pro, I never had such a great time on and off the pitch. Like, they give everyone like confidence and that, and I almost feel sorry for players who haven't had the opportunity to play underneath them.
And is that how you use or your mantra as a coach, right? To be, I guess, not one of the boys, but just try and fit in as well.
Look, I've gotten older now since then. So I was about 36 at the time, and Pete was still playing. He was an actual
player. Oh, he was player coach?
Yeah, he was player coach. I was on the bench on my own. Didn't have any kit men. We didn't have any assistants. Cozzy was the 20s coach, and he was fantastic. He always gave me a hand, and he was a good man to bounce things off. But Pete was out there playing, and he said to me, he goes, I just want to play. He goes, I'll call things from there, but if you see something, just go for a flea. Don't hold back. I'm not going to stop you from doing anything. And I made some, you know, sometimes I'd make some subs and without asking, and they'd look at me strangely, and then we'd win a game, and I think, fuck, did I pull that off properly?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like, I'm just thinking out. I was just a young guy, you know.
And, yeah. And
I'd just come to this team. I wasn't like, I didn't do the preseason with them. And my mantra really, if that's what you want to call it, then I was young enough to fit in with a six-a-side game. I'd fill in here and there. But as I've gotten older, I'm a little bit wiser now. And kids, well, when they're a lot different now. You've got to be careful how you speak to them. They're adults, but they're still young kids. Those guys at Bankstown and Olympic, they were young men. They could, like, you could talk to them like an older uncle, father, be strict on them, blast them, and they took it like men, and they just got on with the job. And nowadays I don't take that approach. Today I did. I let rip. I just walked out there and let rip, and then it second said to me, you just stole my thunder. I go, well, I just couldn't hold back. Sorry, man. But that's how we coach, you know.
And you've been coaching together a long time now?
I think 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know how each other think.
Yeah. We only had a little three-year break where we stuck to our morals. We left Olympic because we felt there was something wasn't right, and we didn't agree with what was going on. That's in the past now, and I hold nothing against Olympic. As a kid, I was the biggest Olympic fan, and Tseka, he coached, played, won trophies. He was captain for 9 years of Olympic. So,
of course.
We had a soft spot for Olympic, but our job is now to win games at Marconi. I don't consider myself anything but Marconi at the moment.
Yeah. And can we touch on that just for a little bit? You've spoken to us about your pre-season was perfect. Nothing went wrong. And look, I know it's a bit of a sore point, and we can go as far or as little into it as you like, but you did lose someone on pretty much deadline day just about.
Yeah, we lost Charles Lagolingoi to Wellington Phoenix, but we were as happy as Larry for the kid to get an A-League gig. He had trained with them and trialled with them early in the before we had started. Not that they didn't want him, but they said that they weren't going to go with him. And he came back to us. He was fine. He just worked his guts out. Every time he took the pitch, he gave you 100%. We built a lot around him, and we were looking forward to having him. Yes, he did go on the day before the deadline. It's unfortunate, but what do you do?
Yeah, he's got an A-League deal.
Yeah, he's got an A-League deal. We'll say he was like, didn't want to leave, but he had to because it's an A-League gig. That's his life. You know, all he has to do is get a run of games. If they use him 4 or 5 games in a row and he starts scoring, you've got a gem there. He's like a rough diamond ready to be moulded. Like he's a good player.
Easy to coach?
Oh, he's the easiest kid to coach. You tell him instructions, he just does it. He never complains. He's one of those players that if the ball doesn't come to him, he doesn't throw his arms up and go, oh, man. There's a lot of those. Well, I've got 5 of them in our team. But he never, ever once went, oh, man, give it to me, my feet. Nothing. He just turned around and started running.
And did another job.
Yeah, he just, until the ball got to him, you know, he never complained.
I guess that's why the next level like him.
Yeah, I hope
they would have seen that.
Yeah, I think they've seen a video of what he did to Mount Druitt. He absolutely destroyed him on his own.
Yeah, we heard about that.
Yeah, so maybe that video might have got him over the line and that they've got injuries and suspensions and whatnot. So good luck to the kid. I hope he kills it. And I told him at the end of the year, I want a jersey. Simple.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Just opportunity once.
Yeah.
Hopefully he gets it.
He's a good kid.
He's a good kid. Now, Sever and I have been talking about this. We're gonna do story time with Flea, if you don't mind.
We've done some research on me.
We've done a bit of research. We've put our heads together, and those people watching will be like, you haven't done any research. There's no way. But guess what? We have.
Okay.
All right? So let's.
I'm going to answer everything and talk candidly. I'm not going to hold back. I just don't want to lose my job at Marconi.
No.
I'm not going to say anything silly that's going to.
We don't want to go. Look, we don't want that either. All right. I want you to run me through the suitcases at Heidelberg.
The suitcases at Heidelberg. All right. So, this is what happened with the suitcases. Michael Uricalo was the coach at the time. He said, I'll give you a trial at Heidelberg, you know. Come. I said, I'm actually in Greece. He goes, well, get your ass back here. I need a centre back. I was overweight. And I was drinking and partying every single night.
The king of Mykonos.
Yeah, I was out every night. I wasn't even thinking of playing NSL at the time. And I snuck back into the country. I didn't tell him. I trained for 2 weeks. Got this guy, Tony Spiridakos. He'd played for Sydney Olympic. He was at the time my best friend. And he said to me, you could play NSL. He goes, anyone can play NSL. You just got to try. You just got to train hard. You got to listen to what I tell you to do. I said, I'm going to do anything I can, but 2 weeks I've got to lose all this weight. So he would get me up in the morning and he'd run me through these golf courses and blah, 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 and then train with the ball. Then at night I'd go to this wall in Rosebery, it's called Turrawal Park, and I'd smash that wall with the left foot, right foot until it went dark. And there's this street lamp that you can still see. You can still see the ball. I'd be there till late. People would be bibbing on. Hey, Flea, what are you doing? Everyone knew I was back now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I rang Uricalo and I said to him, yeah, I'm here, I'm coming. He goes, oh, well, you better get here now. I need to see you. So I packed 2 suitcases full Like, he wanted me to trial. But I packed them as if I was moving country. So I put everything, you know, that, remember those old big WOG suitcases with the buckles?
The buckles.
You took the buckles over. Everyone shoved everything in there. My whole life was in one. And then in the other one, I put all my soccer gear. I didn't know what they were going to give me at the burgers. I just put on my boots and all my training gear. So we get to, I get to the airport and I go, okay, taxi to their training ground, all right? So I get to the training ground. I get out of the cabin. I've got two suitcases and I'm walking over with the suitcases. And he goes to me, what are you doing? I go, I'm here to trial. He goes, you're here for a trial. I said, well, I'm here to stay. So I put the suitcase down in the middle of the dressing room. You know those buttons. I open the thing up and they said, oh, we've got training gear for you. I go, you're right. I put it on. I pulled out my Adidas World Cup with the 16mm screw-ins, you know. You walk out onto and you clink, 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 clink. And he goes, where are you going? It's concrete out there. I go, oh, I've got to make this team, mate. I'm putting on the steel studs. So we go out there and he's just looking at me. He's going, I can't believe you bought two suitcases for a trial. I go, I ain't going back, mate. I can just hurry up and find me a unit because I ain't going back. And then that's where the suitcases came from. I walked into the dressing room and I took up half the dressing room with two suitcases.
Imagine doing that these days.
Mate, they think you're a hero and just probably not put up.
Mate, that's how it was back then. Different mentality, eh?
I think they just looked at me like, this guy's mad. What's he doing? And the funny thing was, I had five stitches from here to here. I'd had a head clash with Tony. And
while training.
Yeah, so I had like five stitches here.
They thought you were a madman, did he?
It gets better. I was playing cricket to lose weight. So I've said to my mates, I'll come and play. And they're going, when are you going to Heidelberg? Aren't you going? I go, yeah, I'll play. So I'm out there playing, batting, and I've hit 113.
I
used to play cricket.
Yeah, right.
I've hit 113. I'm batting, and all I could think of was I put the rain jacket underneath my white shirt.
Sweating
it out, right? So I'm playing against these Aussie blokes, and they're going, what are you doing with that rain jacket, mate? And I go, I'm trying to lose weight to go play for Heidelberg. They go, what's that? I go, don't worry about it.
We're not going to get into that.
Yeah, so the guy's thrown a ball, and it's hit the stump and got me in the other eye. So I've got three stitches here and five there. And Uricalo's just thinking, far out. I don't want to swear. What the fuck have I got myself into here? Suitcases, cut eyes, black eyes. Yeah, so just, yeah, that's a suitcase story, man.
Uricalo, huh?
So yeah, we're going to stay on Uricalo.
Yeah, there's a couple of crackers with him.
The day he told you to break
the
leg?
Serbs.
Yeah, to break a leg or you'll be on the next plane home? Is that how he literally asked you?
Yeah, that's it. All right, I'll tell you how it was. So they had these two foreigners playing for them, and they weren't trying. I can't remember their names. The Littles will know their names. I think one was called Sasha Nedeljkovic, and the other guy was Peter, and he was really tall. He was a striker, and they were just taking the money. They didn't give a shit. They were just here getting them cash. And we were losing every week, and he said, okay, if you don't go out there and break these two blokes, well, at least get one of them, you're on the next plane home, the next effing plane home. So I've gone, what do you mean? He goes, you're out. You better get on the plane next. You're out. So I've gone back into the dressing room, gone and got the Adidas screw-ins, the World Cups, gone back out there with the big studs. And Peter was a nice guy. He lived two doors down from me. It was me, Littles, Bobby Desvitoski, Peter, and we were all in this one sort of building, right? And I didn't really want to hurt him, right? I just wanted to sort of injure him but not kill him, you know? And I got him. I nailed him. I nailed him. Anyway, he's getting carted off. And Uricalo runs onto the field. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? What are you killing my players? You're on the next plane out of here. Get out of here. I can't believe I've even got you here. What do you mean? He goes, get out. So I've gone back in the dressing room thinking, He set me up. He set me up. He wants to get rid of me. He comes in and goes, good job, good job. That's exactly what I wanted.
Oh, no. Wow. Yeah, that's quality. Yeah, and you stayed?
That's good.
I stayed, yeah. But he got the sack.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Uricalo got sacked a couple of weeks later.
And you take it
and you know what? Look, you might hear things about Uricalo, good and bad and whatever. And he's been very successful as a coach overseas. He's won certain trophies.
Smart.
Yeah, people might take the piss out of him, but in his time, he did some really good things. He was smart with me. He knew that I could get rid of the two players that he didn't want. Yeah, so that's what happened with the break his legs or go home. I can't believe I just told that live. He's probably going to start looking for me.
He's going to ring you up. Mate, this podcast goes to heaps of people. Hey, Seva.
Yeah, it does, mate. It does go everywhere.
Okay. All right, so we've also been given some Alex Smith cut lip, no mirrors in the dressing room. Is that a story as a coach?
Yeah, I was coaching. I was assistant coach. So Alex Smith, the American, everyone knows who he is. He's played A-League for Wellington and... yeah, he's a great lad. I'm really close with Alex, to be honest. So I'll just go on that story and then later I'll tell you another one about him. So
Okay. We've
gone into the dressing rooms at John Crean Reserve, I think it's called, in Wollongong, John Crean.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of the name. Yeah, anyway, it's a shit.
Small little dodgy pitch.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. It's nil all during the game. He's gone, clashed, and he's split his lip open, man, like... It's a mess, and I know there's no mirrors in there. It's just a shithole. There's no mirrors, and I've said to the physio. He's gone. I've gone. What? Let me have a look. So I come out there. I go. It's just a nick, Alex. It's just a nick. You'll be fine. He's going. It's just a nick. And him being trying to be tough. He goes. Yeah, it's all right. I'll go to half time.
But he is tough, eh?
He's a tough boy. A tough little skeleton, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So we go into the dressing room and everyone's looking at him and I'm saying in Greek, Skase, shut up. Skase means shut up. So I didn't want him to notice. And I'm going, Skase, don't say anything. I said to the field, don't talk. Don't talk about his lip. There's no mirrors in here. Anyway,
can't see it.
He's going, okay, just don't worry about it. It's dried up. It's all good. We go out there. I've for some reason come out a touch later and the game's kicked off. The ball's come over and Alex Smith's cracked one. It's 1-0 and he's like running down the sideline. I'm thinking, you beauty, Alex Smith scored. We probably take him off now. He's going to have to go get some stitches. The blood stopped. Anyway, Alex Smith scores again. 2-0. Alex Smith scores again. A hat-trick. Our president at the time was George Giannaris. He says, you score from here, $500. It's a free kick. He bangs it in, gets $500 off George. And his lip's like mangled. So we go into the dressing room and they're going, everyone's looking at him like, hey, my luck, I look at his lip, it's finished. So I drove there with Alex.
Oh.
So it was Alex, myself. In the back was George Ogallo, George Abrantes, who was the manager at the time. And someone else was with us. Oh, I can't remember. So we get in the car and Alex drove. So I'm sitting in there. I put the music on. I'm trying to like, I knew he was going to look in the mirror sooner or later. So he starts the car up. He's in the car. Off. And he's just let rip. They're swearing. Flea, what's this? Yeah, I go, don't worry about it. It's only an hour drive to Wollongong. There's heaps of hospitals in Sydney. I go, you live in near Randwick Hospital. We go back to the shop and we have a few beers. You know, after the game, me, George, Littles was with us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was Littles. Yeah. So we're having a few beers. I go, he doesn't know about Australian hospitals, how you have to wait 58 hours to get your lip done. So he goes, oh, I'll just go and get it stitched up and I'll come back, we'll have some beers. I go, absolutely, man. Bring some with you. So we stayed there. We must have watched the EPL. We must have went home 3 a.m. He was still there till 5. He never stuck in there. I knew there was no mirror, so he...
just let him play.
Let him play.
He's a tough bugger.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah, Alex Smith. Alex Smith's a good man.
He's got the American way, man.
Yeah, you know how I met Alex Smith? Like, there was big talk about him. He was playing for Fraser Park. Like, I think they were NPL2 at the time. And we're sitting in my cafe, and we're sitting up the back, and I think it was me, Sam Krizlovich, a couple other guys are just talking football, and we're talking about the scores. And then he's sitting on a table as a customer, and he goes, no, that's wrong. That's not the score. The score was 2-1. I go, how do you know? He goes, I was playing. I go, are you the American? He goes, I'm the American.
Sounds like Clint Eastwood.
The way he said it, goes, right. We just called him the American.
Yeah, okay, you're the American. That's how he talks.
That's
hey?
How he talks, yeah.
That's how he talks.
I'm the American.
All right. He's awesome. Oh, good bloke, hey. Top bloke.
And he's in America coaching now?
No, he's at Melbourne City.
Melbourne City.
I think he coaches the 15s and 16s.
Okay.
Yeah, with, I think, Cassio. I think they're together.
That's right, yeah.
Cassio, that used to play for Adelaide.
For Adelaide, the left-back Brazilian.
I think he's there working together. And he was assistant coach of the women's team that won the comp.
With Vidasic's dad.
Yeah, I think he's definitely with Melbourne.
Yes. Yeah. Doing really well.
We've got grand final win at Dulwich Hill and the after party.
I don't think I can be talking about that sort of stuff. So, look, Dulwich Hill, it was my birthday on the grand final day, and I'd already booked tables, booths, alcohol, women, everything.
Look, man, if you want to go out with someone...
Not anymore, man. I'm 53 now. I'd like you to stay away.
Old school Flea.
So many times we couldn't get into a spot. Flea, you know, blah, 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 Sapphire. Don't worry, boys, just wait there. Three minutes later, 20 of us in.
I'll try to keep it not X-rated. So we're playing, right? So it's my birthday. And some of the boys...
So you weren't losing?
No. So it was nil all, and we had a double send-off. So we were two men down, nine men. It was nil all. I just sent this real long ball, hope, and we jammed it a goal. It was one all, 1-0. And then we got a second goal, 2-0. And we're winning 2-0 with nine men. And I'm thinking, the after party's going to be massive. It's going to be massive. So I said to one of my teammates, I said to him, just stand behind me and we'll just bunker here. For 45 minutes. It was the whole second half. We bunkered, we win. And I had a shoulder injury. You know, and I've got to say, this is so funny. So I've been taking painkillers for it for ages. And it's end of the season now. And I said to this player in my team, I'm not going to mention his name. So I said, give me some of those painkillers, those tablets. Yes, I'm in pain, man. So he's giving me something else. So I'm thinking, I didn't even look. So I go, one's not going to be enough. What is that, a 50? Give me another one, 100. So he's giving me two. By the time we got to the club, like I'm seeing stars and it's like the walls are moving and I'm thinking, oh man, these painkillers are the best. Now I understand how people can get hooked on painkillers. And he slipped me some sort of silly drugs, happy drugs, and I was like thinking... What have I got myself into? But I'd stolen the trophy and taken it with me. You know,
the trophy on your arm.
Yeah. So we took it in with us. And anyway, the after party got a little bit messy. I don't really want to talk about that.
Ah, perfect.
Much. Yeah. My shoulder was good.
Never hurt again for a while.
Yeah, you still can't feel it.
Yeah. I keep reminding him of that, what he did to me. So, yeah, he was a good guy.
Man United, Old Trafford dressing room.
That's a good one. You got some good information. So
we've done our due diligence.
I'm on the island of Kos, not Mykonos, Kos, and I'm lying on the beach with a mate of mine, and we just, you know, it's after a big night, and there's this beautiful English woman, beautiful girl. She's sitting next to me. Like in Europe, the seats are right next to each other, so you can actually put your hand out, and she's just there. Yeah. And my seat, well, she came after me, so I was like, and she sat there. And anyway, she's talking to her girlfriend, and they're talking, they've got real heavy English accents. And they're talking, and they're talking, and then all of a sudden you hear, they're talking about Old Trafford. And I just said, oh, hi, how are you? I'm from Australia. And she goes, oh, you're from Australia, I love your accent. Back in the 90s, Australians were like Mel Gibson, you know, yeah, who were just the best things ever. So, yeah, I'm from Australia. I go, what do you do? She goes, I work at Old Trafford. Do you know football? I go, do I know football? Yeah. I go, yeah, I play a little bit of football. Like, I'm a Man United fan. So she says to me, I'm the ground announcer. I go, okay, well, how about we go out tonight and I'll show you the time of your life? So Lorraine, her name was. Lorraine, I'll never forget it. So we went out, her girlfriend, my mates, and we partied. And I said to her, look, I've got a one-way ticket around the world. I go, I've got England booked in. Can I sleep at your place? And she goes, yeah. I go, okay, well, we're going to Old Trafford, aren't we? She goes, yeah, I'll get you some tickets. So we cut a long story short, we're in England now. A couple of months later, I rung her up. There's no mobile phones. It's you get to the airport, you dial things, right? Anyway, she goes, all right, I'll come and get you. So she comes, picks us up from the airport, takes us to her house. Well, yeah, okay. We've only got 3 days. There's a game against Everton in two. I go, can you get us in? She goes, of course I can. I'm the ground announcer. I work there. My dad worked there. My uncle, everyone worked here. Okay. She goes, you're going to be the special guest at Old Trafford. I go, fantastic. So we roll up. So we get up there and other people had won tickets on the radio or say like, you know, two tickets to meet the Man United team, right? And she goes, you're going to be the special guest, you and your friend Con, my friend Con Connors. And he was an Everton fan, so it was perfect. Wow. Yeah, so we go there and, you know, the little fighter, the little Everton fan, you know, like he was always thinking he was going to put it over us. We beat him 2-0. We get there, and those days, mobile phones, they didn't exist. We had real cameras. I said, I'm not allowed to take photos with the players. She goes, you're going in the dressing rooms with them. You might as well. So there it is. I met the Man United team. I've got photos with Eric Cantona, that Peter Schmeichel's, that team. Palace.
Early 90s.
Yeah. Gary Parker.
Wow. Steve Bruce.
Steve Bruce. Yeah, I've got a great photo of me, Steve Bruce, Eric Cantona, and Con. And, like, I was young and I wasn't scared of anything, right? But when Eric Cantona walked in the room and he was like big barrel-chested guy and I think, oh, my God, that's Eric Cantona.
Wow.
That's like my hero. So we talked to all the other guys, Giggsy, Inks.
Roy Keane?
Yeah, I've got a story about him. So we meet them and I go, my God, like it's the king, you know? I go, do you understand English? I said, not what to say to him. He goes, of course. I said, you're the king. That's all I could say to him. I had nothing else to say. I go, could I have a photo? He goes, of course. And he sort of like, in the photo, he went like that. Like he grew. And I went, oh, fuck, I did it too. I just went up a little bit too so I could keep up with him, you know.
Yeah.
Ever since that day, you can ask people, I get on my toes on every single photo.
And every photo goes up, someone will say, hey, Flea, why are you on your toes? Do you ever say why? Nah.
No, I don't tell him. That's where I learned it.
Cause, really?
Because Eric Cantona went up like this. I thought, he's trying to be bigger than me. So I just did the same. But now I do it to everyone. Everyone's onto me, but they go, Flea, get off your toes. Another thing so in that good. Dressing room, so we're getting, it's a shake your hand, photo, move on, right? So Roy Keane's coming across and I've gone, Roy Keane, man, I've got to get this photo. And he's wearing his suit, shirt, little vest. He's we're about the same age. You know, it wasn't much difference with us, you know. I'm going, pleased to meet you, Roy. And he goes, yeah. And he crushed my hand. He crushed it. So I had a ring on, this fancy Wog Greek thing. And it bled. I bled immediately. Blood came out of my hand. So I've gone, my hand's gone down like that. And I've just looked at my hand and there's blood. I'm thinking, this Roy Keane, how fucking strong is he? So I have a look. Now he's going to shake Connors' hand, right? So Connors, I'm going, Con, Roy Keane. He's gone like this. He's going, ah! He's screaming. Okay, strong handshake. Yeah, Roy Keane, he crushed my hand.
Wow.
That's how strong he was. And I'm not like a puny little guy, but he actually crushed my hand. Yeah, Roy Keane.
What a player.
Yeah,
I love listening to him now when he's...
Oh, how good is he?
He just hammers everybody. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Really?
He's a good pundit, isn't he?
He certainly doesn't hold back.
No, he doesn't hold back. He gives it to everyone.
We want to talk about your relationship with Vince Colosimo and Nick Giannopoulos.
It's cool. I can talk about that. No problem.
Good friends of yours?
Yeah. It's funny how I get asked this question a lot. People say to me, are you still friends with them? And I don't get that. I don't understand how you cannot be friends with someone you grew up with unless you've had a falling out. I honestly believe that people think it was a thing. Oh, you hung around with them because they were famous, or it was just that period of time in your life. But Nick was Michael Budd, or he was best man at my wedding, and Vince was like a groomsman. We lived together for many years in the same house, Vince and I, and when we travelled on all shows that I worked for Nick, I worked for him for many years. Vince and I shared rooms. We were roomies. We were like brothers. There's so many stories I could say about him. And he's just one of the lads. These two guys, people don't realise how normal they really are. Like, Nick Giannopoulos is a very intellectual guy. Like, he can joke around and be funny as... funny as whatever I'm going to say.
We get what you're going to say.
Yeah, right. But he's super intelligent. Like, super intelligent. And Vince... he's just like one of the boys. You know, people come up to me, they were at my 50th, and they said, "I met Vince at your 50th. I said, "Oh, that's nice." He goes, "Didn't realise what a nice guy he is." He walked over, he put his hand out, he said, "Hi, I'm Vince Colosimo. Nice to meet you. How do you know Pete?" And he'd sit with us for half an hour. I said, "Well, this is just the measure of a man. He's just a good guy." These guys, they're not... something different. They're just normal guys who are in that industry.
But they're your mates.
They're my mates. Yeah. Well, I met Nick through a friend. We met in Mykonos. We were young at the time. I was early 20s, and my friend was like a big heavy bouncer guy in nightclubs, right? And he was with Nick. And I said to him, "You with Nick Giannopoulos, huh?" He goes, "Yeah. You want to meet him?" I go, "Yeah. All right. Yeah. It'd be great to meet him. He's a Greek, he's one of us, you know?" I said, "I'd love to meet him." So he introduced me, and I was a brash young kid, right? I just said to him, "Hey, Nick, how are you? Nice to meet you. Having a good time?" He goes, "Yeah, having a great time. What about you?" I go, "This is my island, man. Come with me. I'm going to show you the time of your life." And he just looked at me and he goes, but later on he told me, he goes, "Who the hell is this bloke?" And we just hit it off. We were like close, like brothers straight away. And then when we went back to Sydney, like, that was the year I moved to Heidelberg, went there, and he said, "Oh, you know, you've got to meet Vince," and we started hanging out. And I think I went out more than I trained at Heidelberg.
Really?
We'd have training like 3 to 4 times a week, but with those two, I was out 7 days, 7 nights a week. Even on our nights off, we were still going out. It was just... They took me in, they showed me the city. They wanted to show me how Melbourne, Victoria was better than Sydney. That, you know, that thing that Victorians... Victoria is better than Sydney, you know. So they did show me. And you know what, after a couple of weeks, I thought, "Oh, geez, I could live here forever. It's a mad place." Yeah.
And is that where the movie The King of Mykonos comes from? Am I right in saying it's based off you?
The King of Mykonos... it has my character in there. A couple of the characters are based on me. There's a few stories. Like, there is Frank is Flea.
Yeah.
So Frank is Vince plays me.
Does he?
Yes. And there's a part of Nick's character which is based on me. So I'm not going to say that the whole movie's about me, but. Nick will tell you that he sort of based a little bit on, you know, Frank is Flea. Yeah.
Wow.
So his record of 43 in one summer is wrong. It's actually 49. So we've got to get the numbers right sometimes.
It's a numbers game. It's on film now, right? It's on film.
Yeah. 49, Nick. You know it's 49. Why'd you take those 6 off, Nick? So, I shouldn't act like a smart ass, but we went to Greece every year on our summer holidays. You know, we enjoyed Europe. We travelled together. We became like brothers. Vince and I always shared. Nick had his own room because Vince and I never slept. We were always up all hours of the night. We never wanted to come home. There's a funny story. Like, Super Paradise Beach it's a day club, right? And everyone parties there to start, and then they go home, they shower, and they go out. All right, and we never wanted to leave that beach. It was pumping, just absolutely pumping every day. And the best women went there. The best of the best was there. It was the Mecca at the time. Now it's a little bit different. There's more upmarket places, but Super Paradise was king. And to hide from Nick because he liked to go home a little bit early to have the hot water showers, you know. And we didn't care about hot showers. We just wanted to stay and meet women and meet people. And we used to hide on the dance floor. So Vince and I would duck and weave on the dance floor and we would be looking at him and he'd be going, he'd be looking. You know, I don't know if you know Nick well, but he'd be looking going, where are these guys? Where are they? And Vince, I'd be going, hey, Malika, let's get out of here quickly, quickly. Let's go hide over there. Who are those two? And we'd be ducking and weaving until he caught us. And because I had the keys, I was a driver. I knew the roads better than anyone, right? He didn't take the chance of going on his own.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So he'd have to wait for me. And then he'd finally catch me, you know, like a dad. Yeah. Come here. Get here there. Eat. And he'd make me eat because we were drunk. We were smashed. Everyone was drinking on the island. There was no breathalyzing in Greece in the mid-90s. If you didn't have more than nine people in the car, then
it wasn't legal.
Yeah, man. I remember once we're driving home from the beach and we had one of those Suzuki Swifts, right? You can only fit two in the back, two in the front, maybe three or four if the girls are tiny, all right? We had about 10. So we had 10 of us on this Suzuki Swift, right? And it was August the 15th, which is my name day. It's a big day in Greece, Panagia. It's the biggest day. It's the celebration, right? So the cops have pulled me over. And I'll translate in English, right? Who do you think you are? Where do you think you've come from? Do you think you can come here and drive with 10 people in your car? Who do you think you are? And I said to him, Panayotis Papoutsis, which is my name in Greek, and it's my day of celebration. And my name day, he goes, Panayotis? Okay, Panayotis Papoutsis, do you know me? He goes, Ohere Panayoti Megale Fille. He goes, okay, Pete, you can go, Megale, big man. It's your name day. And I've just driven off, and I've... there's some girls in the back and I was going, yeah, the cops, they know me.
Listen to you.
And I'm just like pumping it out.
That's,
just,
that's where the 49
he's just,
does what he wants.
They're sitting in the back going, did you know them? I go, yeah. Once I told them who I was, they knew who I was. It was cool, yeah. The things you could get away with in the mid-90s was fun, yeah.
Did you get away with any one-liners in any of their movies? Have you got any one-liners that that they took from you or that you can claim back now or no?
Yeah, this jacket's mad. Pull my hair. No, they're all in the movie. There's a lot of things in the movie where the trophy goes out the window. Yeah, there's things. There's heaps
there's
of things.
A lot of trademarks in there.
Yeah, yeah. In Wog Boy 1, there's a lot. Yeah. And then Wog Boy 2, The Kings of Mykonos, a little bit different. Yeah, it's just based on me, you know, the Frank character.
Yeah.
And you obviously miss travelling through COVID now. You miss... getting back there and taking the family back or?
Different now because I've got a family and I've taken my wife many times to Mykonos and she's got her own friends and we love visiting the island. I was almost ready to buy a house there. A few things haven't gone my way, but I'll eventually get a place there, yeah. I know the island where people think of it as just a party island, but it has got some beauty where you can sit and watch the world go by and think, there's no more beautiful place than this.
Yeah.
You know, and I will eventually have my own place there and reside there. Yeah, I will.
When you finish coaching football, right?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Look, the way I see it, I take my coaching seriously, but I'll only ever coach with Pete.
Okay.
It's too much fun, the two of us. And now we've got Manny and Chova and Studsy and, you know, Frankie. We're all together. It's fun. I can't coach without being with Pete.
It looked pretty fun when we were there before.
Yeah.
Well, Danny will tell you it's... Yeah, we've got a combination where we're not the same. We're different guys, but we have like a we think the same. And I might not say something, but he'll say it. Then he might not say it, but I'll say it. And,
yep.
And he just looks at me and goes, yeah. We don't talk, we just do, you know, and... I really love working with him. I don't think he gets enough recognition. His trophy collection is bigger than most coaches in this country. He's won doubles with three different clubs. He's won the NPL, won with, you know, with Bankstown, and won cups. And then we went to Olympic and he won the comp, the double. We won a cup. We won a pre-season thing. We went to South Melbourne and we beat them at the opening of Bob Jane Stadium. Like, we come to Marconi, we got him promoted, we win again the double. A year or two later, we win the what's the cup now called? Waratah Cup. We've won that. We've gone to the round of 16 with the FFA Cup. We only got knocked out by Melbourne City. They beat us 2-1, and on the day I thought we were better than them. Pete doesn't get enough recognition. It put in the same category with some of the A-League coaches. The A-League coaches, the Aussie ones, are doing fantastic. It's when the foreigners come here, I don't really see them being exceptional.
Yeah.
Except for that guy that came, that was at Man City last, the French guy. I didn't mind him.
With the glasses.
I didn't mind him. They beat us, and he came in and he had a chat with us after the game, and he was a very intelligent person. I respected him. But if you could class Tseke in the same mould with, you know, with Mark Rudin and Ufi and Steve Bimby and they all
came from the Premier League as well.
They've got their chance and they've taken it, and I rate that. I love how Aussie coaches have made it in Australia. We can't just keep going out and picking up coaches from other countries. Look at all these guys are doing well. Look at Popper; he won an Asian Champions League. Like, that's unheard of. An Australian team won it. Like, he had state league players.
Yeah,
that were NPL players, man. All right. Ante Kovic, he had the time of his life in goals. You know, like when you look back at those highlights, Ante Kovic was like Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, seriously.
I think it was all him, mate.
I think they should put a statue of him at the Wanderers somewhere. Like, he's royalty for them now. Like, we sometimes sit in our office at Marconi and we talk about it, and he's not a guy that brags.
He's humble, isn't he?
Yeah, and he doesn't promote himself. He's not a guy. He's not like me on Facebook and Instagram pumping it up all day. But I sit next to him in the office, and we just look. Man, you won that Asian Champions League, man. You won it on your own. You put that star, pump him up a bit. He's such a good man. He, you know, and going on these guys, Chova and Seca, given a full time gig in an A-League atmosphere or setup, they won't let you down.
Yeah.
Those two, they won't. They know football. You know, Manny Spanadakis, he's with us in our coaching staff. These guys know footy. They know football. Like, Tseka, given a chance, he deserves a chance. Like, you can't be winning trophies at three different clubs and not getting a chance.
Who else has done their time in the NPL longer than him?
Yeah.
And won as much as him?
Yeah, look, I always found it funny that Bomber never got a chance. He won a lot of trophies. Yeah. Maybe they thought he was too old. I don't agree with that. He should have been given a chance. Other guys were given chances that were nowhere near as qualified as Bomber or Seca.
I played underneath Bomber. I played underneath both ears, and no worries, both. Like, there's Bomber, Cliffy.
Yeah.
It's like Seca and Flea.
Yeah, people say that a lot. You know, I looked up to them. I had a lot of respect for Bomber and Cliffy. I love their partnership and for how long it lasted and how many trophies they won. At the end of the day, you've got to win trophies as a coach. It's good to promote young kids and develop, but the club wants to see success. Marconi is a club that wants success. Over the last 2 years, we've developed a lot of good young kids. We send them off, actually, to the A-League, and we wish them all the best. We want them to make it. We don't want to hold anyone back. That's not the Marconi way. They want our players to move on.
What do you think about if they bring in a relegation promotion sort of?
Oh, I think it would be exciting.
It would be,
It'd be exciting.
Massive dynamic to the club. Yeah, the club will probably start, right, where's our pockets? Let's go for it. They would.
I think it's taken too long. We should have had a Division 2 by now. Like, seriously. And you know, some of those A-League teams in the past have gotten away with saying, we're developing, we're restructuring, all that sort of stuff. We're going to be, you know, we're rebuilding and our philosophy. And
taking the easy way out, really.
Yeah, come on, man. Come on. Some of those teams, if there was relegation and they got relegated into an NPL style setup where you've got to go to Sydney United away, Marconi away, Manly on a Friday night, it's just a shithole to go to. No disrespect to Manly, it's a beautiful place.
It's the drive.
The drive. If you're coming from Marconi to Manly, by the time you get there, you just want to go to sleep. You know, like,
then you've got to perform, and the referees are usually from that pocket anyway.
Yes. Promotion relegation is a must for the game, and and for the players, because then you really got to fight for your game.
What about healthy competition in general? Come on.
Like
training might have been better today if there was promotion relegation. You would have had to, you wouldn't have had to blow your stack.
Look, tonight's training. If that was at Bankstown, the fines I would have given out. I used to just fine them for anything and everything.
We had a kitty. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Thousands, eh? Little Liavis with his book.
Yeah, we used to I used to fine them for anything. But these guys, if I fine them, they'll slash my tyres.
they won't have it.
They won't have. They're not into the fining. So I've softened up a little bit in my
language. Really?
I don't fine that often. I fine that pest, Connor Evans, because he's a pest. Yeah, he deserves fines. Yeah, he's always on my back. He's always doing something, scratching my bum and grabbing at my frontal here, and he's just always pestering me. I just want to slap him, you know. Like, he's one of those kids you just want to give him one. But his old man's a nice guy, so I refrain from smashing.
Maybe you got to bring out the 16 mils again, eh?
Yeah.
Just
put them on.
I think they're illegal now. You know who else used to wear them? Jose Mendez. Remember him?
Jose Mendez, yeah.
Yeah, we played together at Dulwich Hill, and one day he had just come and I hadn't met him, and I was watching him put his boots on. I like watching my new teammates, and he had these big rugby union 16 millers, and I just went, he was sweeper or centre back, and I just went, my type of bloke.
We'll get on well.
I'll get along with Jose Mendez. Don't worry about that. And then he didn't mind a beer. He was my type of guy, you know. He was a good, had a smoke after the game. Just a top bloke. Yeah. We play against each other now, so looking forward to seeing him. But in our age group, we're not allowed screw-ins. And you can't do slide tackles either.
You still enjoy playing, Flea, like when you can?
Yeah, of course. I'm lucky that I play in a fantastic team. Like, I play for the Hurstville City Minotaurs. We're 6 years undefeated. We've won the comp 6 years in a row, 6 grand finals, 3 champions of champions, 3 team of the years in our area. I'm blessed to play in this team because I've got guys like David Barrett and Tom Pontitis and Nick Platanyotis and Angelo Petrados, Steve Karavitakis. The list goes on. I can just keep naming them. And these guys, honestly, Abassad, man, Abassad's like the Lebanese Zidane. There's nothing like
him. He's massive. Is it Malaysia?
Yeah, he's
in Singapore.
He's just a freak, and these guys, they're just super people. Yeah. Like, I take injections every year for my knee, and I train every day with Studsy, and I do weights, and I do everything possible to take the field with them, because I know this might be my last game or my last year.
Yeah.
I only wanted to play 1 year, and now I'm going into my 7th.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. I'm very lucky. Our coach, the general, they call him, he favours me a little bit. I've got a white beard like him. He's Greek, you know. His name's Pete. He favours me. People say that you only get in because the general loves you. I go, well, you know.
Got to take anything you can get.
Yeah. It's fun still playing. Once you stop, I think, once it's over, it's over.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For us older guys, all this winning and keeps us together. Every Friday night we go out and we eat together after the game. We joke around. We take the piss out of each other. We toured Greece 2 years ago. We played against Olympiakos, who had all 15 were internationals. We played Orphi Crete, had 12 internationals. We played Chania, they had 10 internationals. We beat Chania, we beat Orphi 4-1 and 4-2. We lost 1-0 to Olympiakos with the most dubious penalty. We had about 6 goals disallowed, and they changed the ref twice during the game.
Really? You weren't going to win that one?
No, we weren't going to win that one. Oh, I'm captain, right? So I've said to their captain, I was marking him at one stage, and I said to him, what's going on here with the change of refs? He goes, I'll translate it in English. Did you think you were going to come here and win? Yeah, but after the game, like before the game, they gave us gifts, and you're getting all these things from like superstars. They were like $10 million players in their time, you know? And then we went to dinner with them, and they were like really friendly. Like, they were superstars of their era. And I'm just a state league player, man. I played a couple of games for Heidelberg and a couple here and there. And I was looking at them, and they were treating me like I was like one of them, you know?
Yeah.
And they just were the nicest guys. And they came out here to Australia. They did a tour. They toured around Australia. And we went out and had dinner with them, and again they said to us, we never met such nice guys, and if we were ever going to lose, they've won 670 games straight, this team.
Wow.
They go, we should have lost to you guys, that referees. Okay, so we, 670 games.
They were never losing.
That is to the referee, no, you're out.
Yeah.
You're
not doing the job. The ref got subbed just before half time. I go, what, is he injured? They go, no, the real ref's coming on now.
He's going to win us the game.
Yeah, he gave a pen. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was good. Anyway, yeah, it was good times.
Now, Flea, we do enjoy some fun on here, but we do take this seriously. And we spoke with Michael Thwaite last week about how hard it was for him living away from his family and the struggles that he had. Now you've been coaching young men, and you explained before that it was a bit different back in the day, especially when Server was playing. You could give him a spray or you could give it a spray. Have you had to rethink your coaching style now, I guess, for the last 5-10 years? Are they a little bit more precious now? Is social media an impact on their lives? And have you noticed young men, I guess, finding it more difficult to get either into football or just in general life?
I have changed since the little break we had from Olympic to Marconi. There was a couple of years we had off. Then when we came back to coaching, I realised, and yeah, I'm on social media. I see what goes on, and you get to see a lot more now. And kids are taking their lives for no reason, and you don't want that to happen to one of your kids, you know, yeah. One of your coached, someone you coach, you know. And I sort of sense if there's something wrong. I've got a sense for it. Like I lost a friend who committed suicide, and I always think back, could I have done more? And I could have, I actually could have, and it eats away at me a lot. Actually, I loved him. He was such a top guy. I'm not going to say who he is. It killed me that I didn't help him, and now I don't have him here. So I sense things on social media when you hear young players put posts up, and then you look at them and you think there's something wrong. I've put up posts myself saying, if you need a friend or someone to talk to, I'm awake all the time. I'm on 24/7. Message me, and you'll be surprised how many messages I get.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they're young. Yeah. They're young kids who are playing football, who haven't made it for some reason. Something's gone wrong in their life, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to their parents. They look at me as like a... not a father figure, like an older friend, a cousin, an uncle, a guy you can turn to, you know?
We only brought this up last week, but I know a guy that I've done some work for, and that he
does maintenance, cuts grass and stuff like that. Anyway, he rings me the other day and he goes, look, have you got 5 minutes? Yeah, I do. He goes, look, I need help.
Yeah, no worries. He goes,
you ring a professional and they say, yeah, no worries, we'll get back to you in 3 days. And he's like, fucking 10 minutes, I could be dead.
Mm. Yeah.
The help's just not there. So sometimes people think by turning to professionals, it could be a bit of a process. That's why by putting something out on social media, which is instant.
Yeah, I get messages straight away, Sev, on the spot. And I'm not going to mention who they are, and I'm not going to mention their age group, but one guy, I really was worried. I sat on the phone with him for 5 hours, and at the end he came good. He said, oh, I'm so glad you spoke to me for so long. No one cares about you. I go, bullshit. Yeah. Everyone cares about you. I go, we're here for you. Don't be like that. Don't think of it like that. Anytime you want to ring me. Yeah, it's a difficult thing now to say. Some people will go, oh, they're soft. Yeah. They're not like us back in our day. Back in our day, what was our day, man?
Yeah.
How do you know what was going on? There were suicides.
Yeah, it wasn't shown as much.
That's right. It wasn't shown. And like people mentally, they're not weak. They're just at a moment in their lives where something's not going right and they think, you know what, I'm going to chuck this in. You know what, I'm going to be honest, there was times I thought about it. There was times I was doing, you know, really crazy things and I thought about maybe I should just end it here. Like, So I've got no money. I've got, you know, my dad's moved to Greece. I'm on my own. I've lost everything. I'm in my late 20s. And what the fuck am I doing with myself? And lucky I had some good people around me. And I gradually got my self-belief, my confidence back. And I started thinking, you know what, I'm better than this. I can mm. come good, you know. I lost a girlfriend when I was 26. She died of an accidental overdose, right? And some of my close friends and people know that, you know, I didn't come good from that for a long time. You know, and I was always thinking, oh, maybe I should just go join her. And just, what am I doing here? I miss her. I want to be with her, you know. And even me, a strong, mentally tough guy who, if you know me, if my friends will tell you, who would you turn to? Who would you ask to go to war with you? And I'm your man. I'll be there for you for good. Even I thought about it. I thought, you know, maybe I'll just go and join her. It can't be that hard. A couple of tablets. Maybe just jump off a cliff. Mm. So if I'm thinking it, yeah, there's heaps of people out there thinking like that, you know.
The one is mentally strong.
And when, like, and we spoke about it with Swaty last week, and that's sort of why we started the podcast as well, Flea. It was, okay, nostalgia football, let's bring the stories in, let's get those old stories in. But it's also to show people that, you know, some people do suffer from mental health and you don't know who it is, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Could be the bloke next door.
Well, we can talk football, sport, golf, all day, every day. I mean, every day there's something new in the paper, but we needed something with a bit of substance. And what resides with every single code? Mental health. Even and life in general.
Yeah. And look, you know, a young Marconi player or a young NPL player at the moment could somehow get hold of this, right, and watch the end of it and see that you've opened up,
yeah,
right, and know that your door's always open, you know.
Absolutely.
If you save one life, yeah, it's better than anything, right? Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. You know, when someone, usually when you lose someone or lose something, like say for instance, when you stop playing football, all right, and you hear it all the time with the big rugby league players, you know, the big highs of that they have, and you'd see Mark Guy would tell you all about this.
Yeah.
Once the football stops for rugby league or for football or soccer players,
any sports,
yeah, the and that's high what, goes.
Yeah. You miss that,
yeah.
You
and
miss
that's
it.
Why we spoke about it with Swaty last week. That transition from that, those highs, the lows, and it's just it's difficult, right? And at least hopefully that, you know, someone sees it, Flea, tonight, and you've been open and honest with us again, and but we can't thank you enough for those stories, mate. So and we hope everyone at home's enjoyed them. Seva, I know that you know most of those stories, but they're still good to tell, right?
Yeah, they are. They're awesome. Hearing great stories again and again, they never gets old. It really doesn't.
Yeah. Well, you sometimes think back at, I was just talking to a guy on the phone coming into Marconi tonight, and I said to him, at least we lived. You know,
we did. You had a good crack.
Yeah, and I always hashtag, are you living? And yeah, I'm living, man. I'm living every minute to the maximum. Like, I'm at Marconi, I'm playing at Minotaurs, I'm deadlifting over 220 kilos, I'm training the house down. Every minute of the day, I'm trying to find something to do,
yeah,
let alone that I've got two beautiful kids. I spend as much time as I can. I pick them up, drop them off. I'm there at the gate when they run out and they scream, daddy, daddy, daddy. I'm telling you, that 3 minutes of the child, your own child, running out.
That's the best feeling.
And, and she screams out, daddy, daddy, daddy. And it's, nothing can beat that.
Yeah.
Nothing can beat that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one more story before we go. We've got 5 seconds?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so we'd lost a major semi-final. It was for Olympic in our second year. And my wife was having a cesarean the next day. And I was sitting next to Paul Henderson, and it was our first child. So I go to him, I go, Hendo, my wife's having a baby tomorrow. I can't believe we just lost, man. Oh, this is like, I was like freaking out that we'd lost. And he'd give me a little shake, you know, he goes, he'd already had children. He goes, tomorrow is going to be the best feeling of your life. He goes, are you going to watch the baby come out? I said, no way, man. I'm not going to do that. And he grabbed me. He goes, you must watch the baby come out. You got to do it, Flea. I go, Hendo, man, the blood and all that shit. No way. He was like grabbing me going, you got to do it, you know. You got to do it. So, you know, I went home, had a few beers. I was with Ante Juric. Yeah. He lived across the road from my shop. I go, should I watch, you know? Should I watch? He goes, what are you asking me for? I guess, I don't know, man, Flea. So anyway, I went in there and I forget what's the doctor called that comes in. Anyway, he comes out and he says...
Obstetrician?
That guy. It was a Greek guy. He goes...
Of course he was.
A Greek guy. He goes, are you Peter Flea? I go, yeah, I'm Peter Flea. So he's looked at me and goes, you're watching, huh? I go, nah, I'm not into it. He goes, you got to watch. And the face lit up. I go, fuck this, I'm going to watch. So I went in there, looked over it, like they put the... I don't know if any of you guys...
No, my wife didn't have a cesarean, but...
So you can just see over, right? And the baby comes out and you go, oh my God, that's my kid, and it's just come out. And then they just slap one on you and I'm thinking, oh my God, look at this.
Yeah. There's life changing, right?
No, forget
about it. Nothing beats that.
Life changing.
Yeah.
Well, Seba, look, we can't thank Flea enough, and we hope that people can see that where our guests are going to come on and be open and honest and talk about their struggles in life, but also the happier times. So I think tonight shows that with Flea that there's he's got some very good stories.
Yeah, and would you come on again?
Absolutely. Okay, you know, as a kid, this was my dream to have like a talk show host.
I've got an idea. I'll tell you what, stay there. I'll run through the sponsors and then we'll finish with that, all right?
You go for it.
All right. We'd just like to thank our sponsors tonight, mate. So visit letsbemates.com.au. The Planning Station, Maeve, if you need any event planning, call her. DS Tipping and Excavation. The best man in the business, huh? If you need turf laid, you know where to get laid.
You know where to go.
MG Active. You'll like this one, Flea. MG Active, who got Seba in shape and keeping him in shape as we speak.
That's good.
Look at him.
Yeah, he's flying.
And Little Paper Boat Supply Company, who obviously did our logo, supplied us with our air fresheners as well, and it's coming up to winter time. So if you or anyone needs beanies, get in contact with Little Paper Boat Supply Company. And Rusty Penny Brewing, who are keeping us refreshed on the podcast.
Might take a few of those.
Yeah, you can take some of them, Flea.
Definitely.
And the man who makes us look like we do, Jeff Lambert. Visit jefflambert.com.au for any of your video or photography needs. He's pretty good, isn't he, Flea?
Yeah, I hope he's made me look good. It's a rough head of mine. Look at it. Look at that bloke over there.
I'm sure he can. Now, Flea, look, we'd love to get you back on. Seba and I had the conversation. So, mate, we'd love to get you back on to talk about... I know we only scratched the surface tonight, mate. So, if we can. We've got Seka coming up too, so...
Cool, you'll have some fun with him. I know you've got Andrew Burnell coming.
Yeah, we have Andy Burnell coming on too.
Andy Burnell, obviously.
He's a good friend of mine. We're close mates.
Quick story?
Yeah, I've got a quick story.
Come on.
He'd come back from, I think it was England, and it was off-season, so it was, you know, we're back home. He's back home, and him and Tony Spiridakos have said, we'll meet you up in the cross. I was the king of the cross. So I said, yeah, get to the cross. So we're going to the cauldron, and I've got a convertible, an old Jensen Healey. I still have it. And I said, Birch, come with me. We'll get in the car. You know, we were meeting four girls in another club, four of us, four of them. We're going to go have a drink. We get in the car. We're driving. The cop pulls me over. He goes, pull over, son. I'm going, oh, no. So I pulled over. Birch just gets out of the car. I go, Birch, where are you going? He goes, I'm not having this. Guess we did nothing wrong. I go, just calm down. He's out of the car. So I've said, I've got out of the car. Those days, you could get out of the car and have a chat to the policeman. They weren't spraying you or shooting you. capsicum spray. I go, officer, I haven't even had a drink yet. We're about to go meet people. I'm not even drunk. What have you pulled me over? He goes, you're speeding. Speeding? Okay, we can't speed. So Birch has now grabbed the two cops. He's gone, can we have a word? Come over here. I'm going, what are you doing? He's grabbed the cops and he's wanting to take them on. I go, hey, Malaka, get back in the car. I go, we've got to meet these girls. Those days, there was no get your mobile number. If you lose them, you lose them.
Oh, you got a time slot. They're out.
I go, get in the car. He wasn't having it. He wanted to punch on with the cops. Andrew Burnell is on all day.
Is he?
Yeah. When he wakes up, he's on.
He doesn't switch off.
He doesn't switch off. If he's asleep, he's thinking. When he wakes up, he's already thought about it. He's awake 24/7. He's just on, man. I tried to explain to one of my players today, Anthony Frangie, stay on, stay awake, stay focused. Listen to Tseka, stay on. Andrew Burnell was on 24/7.
Yeah.
And look, we can't wait to have him on. We've been, obviously, he was Seba's manager and we've been doing some research on him. And it's a wonderful story, Flea. And we were talking, it needs to be told, right? I know it's in a book. I understand it's in a book, right? But we're going to get him in studio and we're going to, you know.
They blow me away. You got to ask him about Brian Clough. What a story.
Yeah, Clough, yeah.
What a story. Anyway, I'll leave all that to him. His stories are fantastic.
And the last one we've got is, we've said it before, is Mark Robbo and his son Alex. At Hensley.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up with Robbo. He actually played, we played together at Stanmore. Joe Watson was coach.
Yeah.
And he got this young kid to play. Like, he was 15. I'm going, who's this lad? But he was a gun.
Yeah,
he was an absolute gun.
Tough in a tackle, eh?
Yeah, and it just, he was a player. And when we went to Hensley, I've got the canteen there. I've been there 10 years. His five-year period was the best 5 years. I felt like I was a part of the coaching staff. The guy was on. He was, like, winning championship after championship. They started in Div 4, and they made it all the way to the Premier League. He had a vision. He was ready to take it to the Premier League, and he did it. He's a great guy, great coach. It's unfortunate he doesn't coach now.
Yeah.
And I know his son's got a fantastic career coming up with Man City. Nothing will stop his son, only bad luck.
Okay.
Because that kid's going to make it.
Yeah.
He used to be at Hensley. Like, Robbo was in charge from the kids to the first grade, right? So his son would be there from 8 a.m., bacon and egg roll, soccer ball, on the field, halftime, shots, come back off, shooting, behind the goals, in the net, shooting. Come back, Flea, can I have a chicken schnitzel? Eat it. Drink his Gatorade. Back on. This went on for years. This kid trained 5-6 hours a day on his own. He wasn't scared to
overtrain.
He just trained. It would be pouring rain, and the little Robbo, would be out there in just a shirt, pair of shorts, saturated, come in. Can I have a Gatorade? Here, take a Gatorade. Back out there.
Yeah, good.
He's a gun kid.
And we can't wait for those stories either. We've got Robbo, and for a son of a gun segment, we're going to get him on.
Yeah, son of a gun. So what it is it's a son pretty much under the shadow of a father who had been done that.
Well, look at his dad, Robbo's dad, Alex Robinson. He was a gun. He was a Sydney City when they won all those championships. Him and Steve O'Connor were the central defenders of that comp.
Yeah.
They won everything.
Mark's older man.
Yeah. So Alex Robinson Sr.
Yeah.
Mark Robbo, Junior Robbo. Robbo. Yeah, they were guns. Like, I still see Alec around Hensley and that. He's such a humble guy.
Yeah, okay.
Like, he was like a hero to me growing up because I was a Sydney City junior. I was a centre-back. He was a centre-back. My coach was Joe Watson. He used to tell me about him. He'd go, you've got to be like Alex Robinson.
Yeah, okay.
I used to just watch him.
I remember when he coached reserve grade at Marconi. I'd have been about 10 years old.
Scottish
accent.
Yes, and that was around about when I played for Heidelberg, because I remember coming to play Marconi.
Early 90s.
Yeah, I came to play Marconi, and I was a little bit nervous, and I had a look. And Robbo was on the bench. He goes, hey, Flea, good luck. And just like, Alex Robinson knows me.
It made you feel good. Well, we can't wait for those stories. I'm sure the boys will bring them up. Anyway, Flea, look, we could be here all night. We hope we can get you back on another time. Yeah. Seba?
Yeah.
It's another one in the can for us.
Another one in the can. Can't wait till. When's it going to be released? Sunday?
Sunday, yeah.
Hand it over to Jeff.
100%. We'll give it to Jeff and he'll make us look good. Flea,
I hope so.
Thank you for coming on, mate.
Pleasure, man.
And good luck with Marconi for the rest of the season, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks, boys.